presented by the Electronic Payments Coalition.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook editor Mike DeBonis. It's Friday, May 10th. It's National Shrimp Day. Go have some shrimp. Here's what's driving the day. First off, some crucial news for you, our Playbook audience, aka frequent users of Reagan National Airport. The Senate yesterday evening passed the big FAA reauthorization bill. There's lots of stuff in there having to do with aviation safety, air traffic control modernization, blah, blah, blah. But here's the news you can use. It includes approval for 5 new arrivals and departures at the already very busy DCA. That's very good news if you're a frequent long-distance commuter, let's say to and from Capitol Hill, who is looking for convenient new nonstop service options. It's very bad news if you live in the airport flight path, and it's especially bad news for Virginia Senators Tim Kaine and Mark Warner, whose last-ditch effort to kill the provision failed yesterday. The bill still has to pass the House, but no further changes are expected. Donald Trump's criminal trial is back in action this morning in Manhattan, with former White House aide Madeleine Westerhout on the stand. Prosecutors want her to testify about Trump's actions and mindset, as he was said to have been arranging the hush money payments at issue in the trial. Don't expect a repeat of yesterday's fiery action, where Trump lawyer Susan Nicholas needled adult film star and alleged Trump paramour Stormy Daniels in cross-examination, and where Judge Juan Mershon denied a second mistrial request from the Trump legal team, blasting them for what he saw as serious strategic and tactical missteps, including not objecting to more of Daniels' testimony. As for the big news in today's playbook, we had a big ol' interview Wednesday night with House Speaker Mike Johnson. We caught him at a crucial moment, a few hours after he had survived an attempt to remove him as Speaker, and literally just moments after he learned President Joe Biden was conditioning offensive military aid to Israel, thus complicating a deal Johnson had struck with the president just a few weeks ago. He talked about a whole heck of a lot more than that, though, and you can read about it in today's edition of Playbook, check out a Q&A in Politico magazine, and listen to the full conversation on this week's Playbook Deep Dive podcast out this morning. Joining me now to discuss the interview and what we learned about Mike Johnson are the two people who were in the room with him, Playbook co-authors Ryan Lizza and Rachel Bade. Rachel, Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
So set the scene a little bit. It's Wednesday night. You walk into Mike Johnson's office suite in the Capitol, short walk from the House floor. It's quite the moment. What is going on and sort of how is he acting?
To be very honest, it was extremely quiet in there, right, Rachel? I mean, he was gone.
Yeah, everybody was gone.
In the conference room alone, and he kind of comes back from whatever event he was at, and with three aides. But, you know, despite the, you know, stillness of the office, he was in a good mood.
To say the least.
I think we used the word buoyant
for sure,
in one of those
for
pieces
sure.
We wrote this week. You know, he wanted to talk, and, you know, he was expansive.
Like, he's a pretty measured guy. He chooses words carefully. He's not like a big talker. But Rachel, that's not what you seem to encounter.
No, I mean, like, granted, he had just drank a cup of coffee, which
right.
His comms aide lamented as we were exiting after the interview, which was supposed to be 20 to 30 minutes. It was supposed to be. He ended up sitting down with us for more than an hour.
It's kind of funny because he's always complaining about how little sleep he gets. I'm like, dude, you know, we can use you on Playbook if that's, you know.
Yeah, for sure. No, but what one thing that like was very clear, so as Ryan was just saying, like he seemed relieved, right? Very relieved. Like he said, he told us that he wasn't expecting this. He didn't get a heads up. He didn't think they were going to do it. But in spite of, you know, Democrats just saving his gavel, it was very clear that he was happy to have this sort of cloud that had been hanging over his head for weeks out from being above him.
Yeah. So let's zoom out. What do we learn about this guy? He's sort of this paradoxical figure. He's very much a sort of standard bore Reagan conservative in a lot of ways, but he's also embraced the MAGA mindset in a lot of other ways. And how did that play out in the interview?
In preparing for the interview, that is definitely the thing that leaps off the page when you sift through the profiles of him and you just look at his biography. He came up through the sort of what is now traditional social conservative right, and in the South, where it's even a little more conservative, he came up in the sort of Federalist Society, and you know, if not actually the Federalist Society, the sort of adjacent to that, he came up in the sort of Christian conservative legal movement, working on abortion cases, working on same-sex marriage cases, all the big social conservative issues from the 80s and 90s. That was sort of his bread and butter. So you read that biography, you read some of the oppo hits that have been sort of in a lot of the news articles since he becomes speaker, and he has this pretty aggressive far right social conservative background.
Yeah, policy agenda.
Post January 6th, he was pretty much in line, I think surprisingly maybe to some people, with a lot of the efforts to get the results overturned, including the amicus brief on the famous Texas case. And so he's really, really conservative, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
But he had these moments, introspection. And, you know, Rachel, one part is where he talked about his relationship with Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader. I mean, it was not the answer you'd get from someone who's a big party, like a sort of hardcore Jim Jordan style partisan warrior, right?
No, that was one of the most interesting parts of the interview and really underscored how he's just full of these contradictions, right? Like he talked about how much he liked Jeffries, about how they bonded over prayer, bonding over both of them losing their dads at important moments in their political career, being thrust into power. Ryan and I were both really struck by how he talked about the relationship between Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan and how they were so close, and Tip O'Neill visited Reagan in the hospital after he'd been shot and kissed him on the head. And he was like pining for these days of bipartisanship. But at the same time, as Ryan was just saying, you know, he basically doubled down on the amicus brief, which is obviously very controversial from 2020. He suggested that President Biden is indeed senile and hinted to us that, you know, from what he has seen in private, that he agrees with this assessment that he has basically lost a step. And he sort of went back and forth, ping-ponging between, you know, wanting to express that he wants to work with Democrats and like wants, you know, this sort of nostalgic, classic, old school Washington, we're going to work together sort of mantra, but also, you know, reiterating some of these very like MAGA populist conservative priorities that very much go against that.
Presiding over a body that has nothing, resembles nothing like what Tip O'Neill was overseeing. Let's finish up by talking about another relationship that's very important to Johnson, and that's with Donald Trump. So what did he have to say about that, Ryan? In particular, what he wants it to be going forward, particularly after the election, if Trump is elected president?
This is probably one of the most interesting things, both from the interview and just from watching him as speaker, is him recognizing that mastering his relationship with Donald Trump is the key to surviving as speaker. Kevin McCarthy, you know, learned the same thing. And he's probably done, you know, a better job with that. He's clearly quite deferential to Trump. He doesn't say many things that get him crosswise with Trump. And the flip side of that is he has been able to get Trump to back him at very, very important junctures. You know, the two most recent, of course, were getting sort of neutralizing Trump during the foreign aid fight, or at least the last chapter of it. And then most importantly, getting Trump to really come out strongly against the motion to vacate, with that one little Trumpian caveat, you know, maybe in the future he'll support the motion to vacate, but not now. Yeah.
How soon in the future is the question? Yeah,
I was going to say, Rachel, like he immediately after this vote happens, you know, Trump gives him, I would say, not a full-throated vote of confidence. So what do you think that means for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say I disagree with Ryan, but I was actually surprised by how he didn't fawn over Trump as much as I guess I was expecting. Like, I asked him at one point if he agreed with the sentiment that he's only speaker because of Trump, which we all know is true. And he really sort of waffled on this. Like, well, I guess he endorsed me. But like McCarthy, when he won the gavel, he went out in front of the cameras first thing and said, "Thank you, Donald Trump. basically attributing that victory entirely to the former president. And I mean, Johnson didn't really do that. He also, we asked him obviously about this idea of defunding the special counsel, which is very important to Marjorie Taylor Greene, one of her demands. Trump loves this idea. And Johnson just poured cold water all over it and said it's not workable. Basically, they're not going to do it. And I got to tell you, this clearly is causing a problem in Trump world, because I texted the Trump campaign about it at exactly 10:27 this morning for Playbook PM to see what is your comment here. And I got a call from someone very close to Mike Johnson at 10:31, less than 5 minutes later. So you can see the Trump campaign got my inquiry, reached out and was like, what the hell's going on here? And the speaker's folks basically said, look, he might not want to defund the special counsel, but we're going to find a way to check Jack Smith. So like, that was a break from Trump. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's not the end of the story. Yeah,
definitely a huge relationship to watch. Ryan, Rachel, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
And for your schedule today, the House and the Senate are both out. As for President Biden, he has a whirlwind day of fundraising on the West Coast. He'll first fly to the Bay Area of California for two campaign events, before then heading to the Seattle area for another. The music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Callan Tansel-Suddeth is our podcast producer. Annie Reese is managing producer. And Zach Stanton and myself are Playbook's editors. I'm Mike DeBonis. Thanks for listening.
A new study reports credit card rewards provide a lifeline for working-class Americans. Rewards like cashback empower low-income families to pay for everyday essentials. So why are DC politicians partnering with corporate megastores to end your hard-earned rewards? The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill takes billions from American families, lining corporate pockets instead. Tell DC politicians to oppose Durbin-Marshall. Learn more at electronicpaymentscoalition.com.